You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we've reached the peak of another year of farce. Welcome to the 2019 Peak Farce Awards. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you're joining us for the first time, hopefully you know what's going on. Hopefully this isn't too off-putting. Something about doing a podcast is it's sort of like old school network television back in the day where when they came back even from commercials, they'd had to be like, this is what happened right before the commercial. We don't do a lot of that in the show, so hopefully you can pick up what's going on when we talk about things. We'll try to add that context in, but we're going to be going over what happened over the past year and sort of reflecting on everything on a cultural level and on a personal level. And on that note, let me bring in my co-host joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
If we were to award a city with Most Farcical City of the Year award, do you think it would be at least competitive between Los Angeles and Washington, D.C.?
Seattle has to be in the running.
Seattle, but I was going to say dark horse candidate being Baltimore.
Baltimore is the city that reads.
But yes, it literally is. I mean, everything you hear, right? And it's so funny to just be okay with one of these, you know, common aphorisms, or I don't even know if that's common anecdotes. You can give me the word if I'm picking the wrong word. But where people say, you know, there's a great country surrounded by two coasts. It really is. The rest of the country isn't that bad, but LA and fucking DC are insane.
We do make up at least the plurality of all farce. Just those two cities. Seattle may be in there. I feel like Seattle's farce is pointed, but it's not deep. Like, you get these jabs of farce every once in a while, and you're like, wow, that is deadly. But overall, the consistent farce level of Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. is high.
Well, you know why Seattle is only pointed and only has elements or moments of farce? It's the weather, right? In L.A., you've got this perfect weather bubble, so they have the energy all the time to live in this delusional alternate universe. And then in D.C., they've created through government an alternate universe for themselves to live in, so they're protected enough that even though the weather's not great. But in Seattle, they have to deal with the harshness of the reality of their weather that they can't escape reality that much.
Yeah, that often. But they do. They find ways.
Well, when you got the homeless people wandering around that they're so high that they're yelling at little children, I mean, you got to have some element of farce there, right?
And I guess we should say that San Francisco's making a run at it. So they still have Silicon Valley, but that's leading the way now in terms of the farce brigade. But I feel like L.A. and D.C. still the two heavyweights in terms of the coasts.
Yes, and one final point before I introduce our other co-host. When you talk about San Francisco, I think there's interesting stuff to reflect on. Is the tech industry sort of the arm of the government? How involved is government in tech industry and in Silicon Valley? And I think that creates a lot of interesting issues in our society and perhaps explains why there's so much farce in San Francisco.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. I don't know, Justin. I think you're 100% incorrect on that. I'm old, and I know I'm old. About to turn 40 here in February. I remember when Silicon Valley were the sort of libertarian outcasts from the universities. And then slowly it became the mainstream and just a complete extension of what was happening at universities. So So yeah, I think now they are in the vanguard, but it's their connection to academia and the poison that's going on there. That's really the thing. But
you think I see a difference between higher education and government in this country?
Probably. There's a little difference, right? We have tenure in the academy.
One has nicer buildings
and better football teams. I think we just lost our two Redskin fan listeners.
The DC bureaucrats would be an awful team. Just saying.
Well, they're Redskins fans?
There's got to be at least one. Maybe not any of our listeners. Hmm? Hit us up on Discord if you're a Redskins fan.
Sorry, tiny tangential. My biggest regret of living in DC of the past 5 years has been not going to the Patriots game this year when it was in Washington, because I didn't want to be in a Brady jersey at Redskins Stadium thinking that I might be, I don't know, murdered. And it turns out that it was basically a home game for Patriots, as they were something like 65 or 68% of the audience. So I do regret that.
Yeah, it was same for me. Way back in the day, going to see the Red Wings play in DC, it felt like a home game, except for the home team crowd did not know how to cheer. It was crazy. They were like dead silent during their power play, and just it was weird. But speaking of weird, I know I posted this before the show. Did you see we had a day one patch for Cats? I know everyone's talking about Star Wars, but we got to talk about that for at least a second. The movie's not even out, what, a weekend? And they're already patching the movie.
Our beta premiere of Cats went well, but there were many things that we wanted to correct. So we're releasing version one of Cats.
You think I'm joking, but next up, microtransactions. There'll be some microtransactions in these movies soon.
How do you do a microtransaction in a movie?
Do you want to see the next scene? Pay 99 cents.
Do you want to see it in extra color? Want to change the outfits of the characters?
I mean, are they going to have like rotating theaters like with the Carousel of Progress in Disney? And what you do is, based on what you want to see happen next, you pay, and then they rotate your seat into a different area. And so everyone sees a different movie. It's like a choose your own adventure based on paying.
It's a brave, weird new world. If y'all had the Oculus Rift things on the headgear, you could all be watching your own movie in theaters, and it's, you know, it's like being at home. So,
or you could just stay home and wait for all the director's cuts and watch movies on 75-inch TVs.
Yeah, capitalism sucks, man.
All right, so we're talking about Washington, and we're talking about how terrible it is and everything. I think that's a good transition into maybe we should just shut it down. So let's talk about that in the news, where we're going to reflect on the top news stories of the year with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals.
Thank you to our Patreon subscribers. You made 2019 possible for us here on The Midside by going to patreon.com/TheMidside and giving a couple dollars every time we produce a show. It helps us keep the lights on, which the federal government could not do this year. Indeed, we're cutting in the top five most farcical stories of the year, or maybe just the top five news stories in general, no matter their farce. And the federal government shutdown, which began the year, is story number five. Yes, although it began in late December of 2018, the longest government shutdown in American history lasted all the way until the 25th of January, ringing in the new year with some missed spending opportunities for the government, saving us a ton of money. I think someone calculated that like it cost taxpayers something like $80 million a day for the government to be shut down, which then was further calculated to be a massive savings compared to what it cost the taxpayer when the government is up and running. So looking forward to more of that, although we just avoided another shutdown as the Democrats and Republicans, amidst some other political stuff that we'll talk about in a moment, agreed on a $1 trillion spending bill that also raises the age of tobacco purchase to 21.
I love how they just slide stuff like that in there.
It's fantastic. Also reauthorized the Patriot Act and a number of other horrible things. So,
sweet.
Justin, are you hoping and praying for more government shutdown in 2020 like I am?
I think we should just impeach the entire government. That's what I think we should do. Yeah, I mean, I think this was great. I think it was a great way to start the year. I mean, I think we can say all we want about all the good Trump has done. Isn't this the best thing Trump has done? I mean, that's
longest shutdown in history.
Yeah, because I mean, that's literal. But my brain is escaping me right now. It's literal. What's the word that they logjam, right? That's literally what the founding fathers were going for by having the two sides here. And yes. I do think that this whole thing sort of, it's going to set up the next story, but it's set up a lot of what's gone on in this country over the past 4 years, over the past year, with how deep the divide is. The divide got so deep that the government literally shut down for an entire month. And as you said, we saw that it actually saved us money as the American taxpayer. And maybe that's something we should pay attention to a little bit more. Maybe we should look and go, hey, you know, maybe we don't need these fuckers.
William, during the Obama administration's government shutdown, Faiz and I were driving across the country to move to Texas, and we were going to stop at the Grand Canyon because I thought, well, while I'm here, I might as well see a giant hole in the ground. But the government shutdown literally shut down the Grand Canyon, so we had to skip it. How were you affected by this year's government shutdown?
Not at all. I was not affected at all.
What? Wait a minute. Yeah.
How do you shut down a giant hole in the ground?
we had talked about that. What got me about this story was the whole debate about how much back pay for contractors we should be for government contractors should we be providing payment for non services, and then. You know, wondering why can't California do this? If you remember, we talked about that. Why can't we have a California government shutdown? I could probably build an entire additional Jersey Mike's during a California government shutdown with the lack of required inspections and approvals.
I was going to say, if the California government shut down for even a week, you'd have the biggest economic boom in the state's history.
Well, except nobody would be able to get driver's licenses. Oh, wait, no, they still can't get driver's licenses. Appointments are not available.
You know who would disappear if the California government got shut down? All the homeless people, because everyone who is afraid of government right now would fight back against the homeless people.
Fight back. Like there'd be little wars in the streets with sticks and stuff.
There would.
Well, speaking of a war of sorts, the number four news story of the year, and I'm surprised it didn't rank higher, although we have a predilection toward not politics here, so I get it, is the Trump impeachment and the growing American political divide. Yes, this past week, the House of Representatives voted to impeach the president for obstruction of Congress and for something else, the other one, whatever it was, they're both bullshit. As much as I want Trump to be impeached, these were the least two interesting articles of impeachment that you could possibly have brought against this particular president. And in a continuing effort to prove that 2019 is the stupidest year to be alive, Nancy Pelosi is now arguing that Trump and some other Democrats are now arguing that Trump is officially not impeached. In fact, until she, Nancy Pelosi, hands over the articles of impeachment to the Senate in some ballot paper form or some book or binder or whatever. So, in fact, while the vote occurred, apparently the president is not yet impeached. Justin, is this how anything else in life works? Like a judge finds you guilty, but you're not actually guilty until they hand a piece of paper over to the jail?
Do you want Justin to answer, or do you want Justin, the California state employee, to answer?
False dichotomy, bro.
It was a false dichotomy in order to prove a point. This is someone who's been so steeped in bureaucracy her whole life that that's what she believes reality is. In reality, they've said Trump has been impeached, so everyone in the country believes he's been impeached. But to her, the reality is the paperwork, the concrete example of it. And it's also her own fucking self-importance, right? Oh my God, until I hand over the papers, he's not impeached. Yes, Nancy Pelosi. Yes, you are the one controlling the entire fucking United States of America right now, Nancy Pelosi. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
William,
I was going to ask you a question. Okay. Yeah. I remember what I was going to ask you. This is my question. How fucking absurd are we in 2019 that it's the Democrats saying Trump hasn't been impeached yet? Aren't they using the argument? When I heard that argument, I thought the right was using that argument. I thought the right was being like, no, you didn't really impeach Trump. You're too much of pussies. This is all just a game, blah, blah. And it's honestly, it's all a game, right? This is just posturing to make people feel like he's unelectable. So when they go to the ballot boxes, is it 2020 they vote or 2021?
2020.
So when they vote next year, they don't vote for
Someone
Trump because they want to feel
American
like
American citizenship.
I don't
quiz.
Remember anymore. I don't care. Don't vote. The system's corrupt, okay? Do not vote. The system is corrupt. They're both hacking the ballots. Until you show me an objective measure for voting, I'm not going to vote for either of these fucking cheating parties. Anyway, now that you sent me on my tangent here, it's obviously just political, but isn't it ridiculous that the left is using the argument that you would think the right is using? That's how fucking insane this has all become.
Yeah, the Babylon Bee was resharing its article about the Trump strategy of embracing impeachment so Democrats are forced to oppose it. And that's sort of been exactly what Trump did, which was like, fine, I'm impeached. Let's go to the Senate and get this over with. Because he knows he's not going to be convicted in the Senate. And so the Democrats would go, hey, wait. You're not impeached till we say you're impeached.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And so the Babylon Bee is 100% correct. And then I have another question here. They impeached him for obstructing Congress, you said.
Yes, that was one of them.
Isn't that his role in the Constitution? Isn't that the purpose of... correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought we had checks and balances. Isn't that the role of the president?
That was literally...
Ben Shapiro's been covering this. I don't... I like to see what the conservatives are saying about things. And on this one, he really dissected it correctly. He was like... You know, we have this separation of powers thing, and like the Democrats could have subpoenaed and adjudicated a subpoena for some of the witnesses they wanted, right? But that would have taken time, and they wanted to get this done quickly. They want to get the articles of impeachment out quickly. So now you have this situation where they're saying, well, they asked nicely for these witnesses to come, and they didn't come, therefore, at the apparently president's request, so therefore the president obstructed Congress. But they didn't go to the third branch, the judicial branch, and get the subpoena sort of like, I don't, you know, Daniel can correct me, it's like legitimized or whatever, right? Like they didn't he said I have executive privilege, and they didn't go to the third branch to say whether that is true or not.
Yeah, it was all insane. The other one was abuse of power, which, again, pick something, right? Like bribery or something, not just abuse of power, which is a weird article of impeachment. William, Bill Clinton was also impeached on December 19th, several decades ago. Is this just going to be an ongoing Star Wars-esque rehashing of the past, where we just keep doing this over and over again for idiotic reasons every 20-ish years?
Can we have Ryan Johnson come in and direct an impeachment one year that makes no sense and everyone gets really angry about?
And who had the stupider articles of impeachment, Bill Clinton or Donald Trump?
I think it's Trump. At least there was an underlying crime. You know, as flimsy as it was, the whole lying thing, perjury, but with Clinton. But yeah, with Trump, it's interesting. It is a political show. I think that it may continue to happen as long as we have these fringe elements on the left, but also increasingly on the right, that control the mainstream political discourse. I don't think we're any more polarized than before. I think what we're doing is amplifying the extremes to such an extent that it's drowning out all other conversation. I mean, if you walk up to a random person in the street, do you think they care that Trump is impeached? And if they do, wouldn't they just laugh at it? Like, Trump is not doing anything that people didn't figure he would do, right? People are not dissatisfied with Trump. Their mind were made up, or is already made up about Trump.
I mean, yeah. I can't answer that question. I live in California, so you walk down the street and you say Trump and people try to murder you, so...
Well, this is the worst saga ever, and I suspect it will only continue as DC, much like Disney, wants to milk this cash cow for as much as it's worth. The number three story of 2019 is sort of a conglomeration of stories.
Wait. I had one more thing I wanted to say. I just remembered when you were saying the similarities between the sagas. You realize that they were both impeached because of their wrongdoing to Hillary, right?
Yeah.
Is she the emperor in this situation? Or? Yes.
When she runs in 2020, there's a chance we could have a third.
Let's do it. So, speaking of third, the third most impactful story of the year, a little more solemn here, but much needed discussion. It was the mass shootings and the cultural reaction to the shootings. We had several deadly mass shootings in the United States, no matter what metric you use to define it. As of October 1, ABC News said there were 21 deadly mass shootings in the U.S., including at the El Paso Walmart, where 22 people were killed. There was also the one in downtown Dayton, Ohio, where the gunman opened fire and killed 9 people. Approximately every 2 weeks, there was an active shooter in the country, said an FBI field agent. Justin, was this the quote-unquote year of the mass shooting? Was this not outside the normal? How are we supposed to start thinking about this?
Well, I'm no statistician, and I don't know all the exact numbers, so I don't want to make any sort of proclamation as far as were there more or less. I believe there were fewer. I believe there were fewer. But here's the problem. And this is what makes it farcical, and this is what makes it tragic, and this shows the tragic side of farce, is the conversation around it is so skewed due to agendas, as William is saying, these extreme voices drowning out the middle ground, that we don't know the reality of the situation, really. We can't really figure out what's going on. We can't figure out how frequent the actual problem is, because the definition of what a mass shooting is being fucked with by both sides to make their points. So we can't have a real conversation. And to me, that's the real tragedy of it, is these people are dying. These people are losing their lives. And we can't even figure out what's going on and try to actually fix it and address the problem, because we would rather politicize what's the definition of mass shooting so we can get our agenda across. And to me, that's what really is at issue here.
Yeah. And we can find a kernel of truth in all of the hysteria around these shootings. I think there is something to be said about masculinity in these shootings. We know the attack on boys and masculinity is one of the causes, and mental illness is one of the causes. And the fact that this becomes about this turns into a debate about taking away law-abiding citizens' guns every time this comes up, it is really gross, right? It would be... Think of other rights, like your freedom to travel, and every time people talked about freedom of travel that we have to restrict it, they would just show you video after video of car accidents, right? It would be crazy.
Yeah, it would be crazy, but we're not that far away from that, because we're sort of taking a couple things like the presumption of innocence and the presumption of liberty, and we're sort of inverting them. We're getting, it was Ayn Rand who said we're getting to an inversion point, and we're approaching it very quickly now at breakneck speed, where there is no longer a presumption of liberty. There's a presumption of harm, or a presumption of security, if you will, where the mantra is becoming essentially, damn your rights, what about my safety? Which is ultimately the inversion of the entire concept of the United States. So while I agree with you both that there is some truth to all of this, and the question of what should be done is an important broad cultural, sociological, economic, religious, moral, philosophical question, the answer is never going to be restrict people's rights. It can't be that answer, because there's no logical path to that answer. There's only a path of emotion and fear and control. Those are the only paths to that answer.
No, the question, Daniel, always has to be is, where is the proper enforcement? And what I mean by that is, when we're talking about the legitimate purposes of government, one being police, right, the protection of the citizens, when I say enforcement, what I really mean is, what is the proper way to identify the people who are the actual threats, who are manifesting the actual problem, or who are a manifestation of the actual problem, rather than just saying, oh, we're going to punish everyone by taking away their rights? And that's the problem in this country right now, where something goes wrong and it goes, oh, you know what, we're just going to limit everyone, because that's the fairest thing, is to limit everyone, because we're not allowed to make moral judgments anymore. We're not allowed to say anyone's better or worse than anyone else. It's just everyone gets punished. It's this whole idea that we were raised on, which I've never agreed with, where people
there's
say,
also
oh,
that collectivism in there, Justin. It's not that the perpetrators of these horrific acts are to blame, or even the people connected to them. It's all gun owners. They're to blame because they want to keep their guns, and therefore they want, or they're to blame for these mass shootings. If only they hadn't opposed whatever the last gun control measure was, then this wouldn't have happened. And therefore, right, we should collectively hold all NRA members accountable for it.
Right. And if a if a gun owner does something in retaliation to protect himself, oh, well, he's the one at fault because he used his gun. And it's the whole idea of, oh, the second offense is the one that gets caught. I've never understood in life, if we understand that the second offense is the one that gets caught, that we continually don't punish the first offense. And this is the point we get to. The reason we don't punish the first offense is it has to do with, we don't want to judge. We don't want to judge why that person got upset. We don't want to judge gun owners. We don't want to use the emotional and intellectual energy, William, to judge people on an individual level. We'd rather just go, oh, all gun owners are bad, therefore let's just take away their guns, rather than look at each individual person and say, oh, that person is responsible enough to use a gun or not, who you come across in your daily life. We're offloading our personal responsibility to the government, and we're letting them make the judgments for us. It's not, oh, I'm going to go about my daily life, and if I meet someone who has a gun and worries me, I'm going to cut that person out of my life. It's, oh, I'm just going to have the government say nobody can have a gun because that's the easiest way to protect myself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not even someone who...
Speaking of inversions, number two.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry. That was a transition. I thought you were making a point, but it was a brilliantly done transition that I didn't get.
I thought he was just talking about pencils.
Sort of.
The number two story of the year, yeah, speaking of inversions, had to be transgender athletes, specifically the competition of men in women's sports and the fact that men are dominating at women's sports. We had several stories out of high school athletics where men transitioning to women were competing at track events and dominating there, including, I think, lawsuits out of Connecticut about this whole thing. And then the discussion back and forth about the science of it all and whether these hormones actually do help, or whether men's, or whether the people who have transitioned, whether their bone structure that they were born with helps and or hurts or not. But I think nonetheless, the story did dominate a lot of the news throughout the year, so it made sense that it would be number two. Justin, speaking of number two, are there two genders?
Yes.
There are millions.
You and the radical
and
J.K. Rowling out there. Yes.
That's it? That's all. That's the entire question?
Well, I
figured while we were doing a year-end show, we might as well just get canceled right here and right now.
Well, so. In that case, let me say what will get us canceled, because there's been some kerfuffles in the fallout from all of this transgender craziness this year. With the new rules on the latest rule updates on Twitter and YouTube, you have trans women saying, "Hey, I'm not a biological woman," on Twitter and YouTube, getting shut down for hate speech, getting banned for hate speech.
Well, that's
describing themselves as not a woman.
That's internalized self-hatred.
I guess. I don't know. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's Twitter now determining who's woke enough to speak, which is, whew.
Well, yeah, let's marginalize marginalized people. It's the snake eating itself, as we always say.
Because they hold the wrong opinions. They're sex traitors. That's what they are.
Well, I mean, William, that's in line with the whole idea of, I literally opened Twitter and just saw a tweet. The whole idea that it's transphobic to not date a trans person. They're trying to establish as normal something that's not normal.
And to be clear, normalness or not doesn't necessarily have a prescriptive connotation to it. It doesn't mean not normal equals bad. It was not normal for the American founding fathers to rebel against collectivism in favor of individualism, but that didn't make it bad. It didn't make it immoral.
Right, and I'm using a normal here to just simply talk about frequency.
Yes.
Now, I'm just saying it's infrequent for there to be a trans person. It's infrequent for I don't even know the fucking language. Somebody who's non-trans to want to date a trans person. That is abnormal. As Dan's saying, that doesn't make it bad. That's a personal choice. We can discuss whether that's good or bad. That's not really a discussion I'm interested in having. If that's what you're into, I don't give a fuck. I really don't care. I don't give a care. What I care about with all of this stuff, and this is the problem with this news story. The problem with all of this stuff is the second-handedness with which it's done. And what I mean by that is taking that thing and taking your prescriptive judgment and trying to force society to have that same prescriptive judgment. And that's the problem here. And we see real life consequences. The idea that we're supposed to accept that men who became women are women and let them compete against women in sports is forcing us to accept them as the same and forcing them to accept that as normal when prescriptively it's not. And by forcing us to accept that, we see how it's hurting real biological women. And that's the problem. The problem is forcing people to accept your view of reality as the only view of reality.
It's trying to make an A non-A, and it's just not going to work.
It's trying to force other people to make A and non-A. If you want to fucking go around all day and make A and non-A, I don't care. I don't care. Do you think, like, the homeless person on the street, I'm worried about them wandering around being like, there's a radio chip in my head. There's a radio chip in my head. I don't really care. Now, when they walk up to me and start telling me, why is there a radio chip in my head? Then I care because you've gotten involved with me. But if you want to wander around and say crazy shit or say normal shit, I don't care. It doesn't bother me. The point is when you go, A is not A, and then you walk up to you, William, and you go, say A is not A. And if you don't say it, you're a bad person. That's the problem.
And if you don't say it, I'm going to use the gun of the government to make you say it.
And you don't have sex with it, then you're a transphobe.
Then you're an aphobe. That is a particularly good point, Justin. Which somewhat leads into the number one story, but there's a lot going on here. So, man, there was so much impactful news this year, but it was pretty clear, I think, from the start of this gathering of information, what would be the number one news story this year, because it was a spark of hope. It was, if you will, a moment of respite from the farce, save for perhaps the reaction in America. But the Hong Kong protests, the fighting for freedom in Hong Kong against the Chinese government, had to be the number one news story of the year because one of its sheer intensity, the ideals that were fought for, the fact that these Hong Kong protesters were waving the American flag and reading the Constitution and reading the Declaration of Independence, and they seem to be the people who are carrying on the spirit of 1776, even in the face of many Americans either not caring or not getting it, or even a smaller minority, to be fair, actively opposing this as overreaction, or look at this strange American Eurocentric view of the world and rights, and they just don't get it. Especially as Chinese nationalists started infiltrating American propaganda and trying to convince us that what the Hong Kong protesters doing was against the good of the state, against the good of the collective will of the people. So, Justin, do you admire these protesters as much as I do?
I think that what they're doing is incredible. When you hear about people who can actually fight back about the in the kind of system they're living in and the amount they're putting themselves at risk, I just think it's absolutely amazing. And I'm going to push back on you a little bit. You said that, you know, they were a ray of hope, but the backlash in this country wasn't a ray of hope. I disagree. I think that the people in this country who came out against the protesters had enough of a backlash against them that it made me feel good about this society and that we still have standards and we're still having this conversation. I mean, South Park did a whole episode about it. And I think a lot of our misgivings in our society were sort of concretized in this whole sort of thing. I mean, when you talk about the entertainment industry, in specific, when we talk about sports or the movies, how they're willing to pander to the Chinese market in order to make money. And we see people like Disney and LeBron James supporting the Chinese government and the way they were called out for it. I think that's a good sign that people were willing to call them out and that South Park was willing to do the type of episode they did. I think that's a good sign that there's still a large amount of Americanism out there, traditional Americanism out there, and that if push came to shove, I think people would fight for it. So I disagree with you that the backlash was bad in this country as well. I think there were people who tried to, but I think they were roundly made to look stupid by everyone else.
Yeah, I think the Band-Aid's been pulled off, right? This made that influence of that China is having on our culture visible to people. And I think we'll look back to 2019. I think it's good that it's our number one story because we're going to look back and remember this moment as when the public became genuinely aware of this issue. And it's interesting because in China, they, you know, we talk about all the time in Islamic countries, it's the issue is the separation of church and state, right? Like that seems to be the fundamental issue that that is just not learned. The fundamental lesson that it has not been learned is not implemented in their governments. And when you have a communist country like China, it is the same issue. Like you see how their counter propaganda, anything that's against the Chinese government is made to sound as a racist slight against the Chinese people, right? And you started to see that in the initial quote-unquote backlash against people who stood up for Hong Kong. And then you had this groundswelling of American support saying, hey, wait, their ideals are our ideals. And it was just a fascinating thing to watch unfold.
I would just say that I think the response I was talking about in particular was the corporate kind of mainstream media response to it all. Because for as much as the backlash was inspiring, I don't disagree with you there, Justin. It didn't get enough attention. It didn't get made mainstream enough for me. I mean, I guess you could say you were inspired by it, and I was inspired by it, but it was sort of disheartening that all of the available avenues that hit mainstream media or culture tried to shut it down as best they could.
Well, I'm not saying the battle's over. I think William's point is exactly the point. I think he said it very well, that the Band-Aid's been ripped off, and this is the beginning of it, and hopefully it will continue, right? Hopefully we'll start to see more bleeding over the next year. And I don't mean that literally, anyone who's listening to the show, yeah. Fuck off. Metaphorically, hopefully we see that cut grow, and hopefully it becomes more and more mainstream, and it's shut down less and less. Because, Daniel, is that not why we do this show? Is that not why there are other people like us out there? And you know what? I have my entire life, and I will continue to hold on to the fact that it says a lot that Trey Parker and Matt Stone did that, that they did those episodes. That's mainstream. And maybe it's not the mainstream, but it's there. And we've been looking for something. We've been looking for signs for the death of social justice. We've been looking for this country still being alive. And we even joked at the beginning, we talked about LA, DC versus the rest of the country. The rest of the country is still alive and kicking. It's just they're worried about living. They're not worried about all this other stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so let's do the good that we can do by moving forward. And let's give out our year-end awards here. William, I think maybe we can hit the let's do the hopeful romantic soundbite for this. Yep. Does that sound good?
Here we go. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on.
If you wanted to influence these awards on a deeper level, the place to do that would have been Discord. I've been in there trying to solicit nominations and votes for the last few weeks, over the last month or so. So if you get a chance, and over the next year, and over our upcoming hiatus, if you want to stay in touch and keep the conversation going over that hiatus, you can join our Discord by going to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, clicking on any of the episode links. So these awards are called the Peak Farce Awards. We have a number of categories, and we have been giving these awards out since 2014. How insane is that, Daniel?
I didn't know people were alive then.
Did you know we were alive then? It feels so long ago, doesn't it? I can't believe that we've been giving out the awards that long. So no. What we'll do is we'll go through the several awards that you all nominated for, talk about your nominations, we'll talk about who we picked to win and why, and then we will hand out the award that you all voted on, the Peak Farce Audience Award. What was the story that had the greatest amount of farce over the last year as voted on by you, the Midsiders? So let's start here with the first award, the Narcissist of the Year Award. Daniel, you want to talk about some of the past winners?
Sure, absolutely. I will say that this category has been one that has actually been dominated by politics, despite the fact that the show is not a particularly political show. Because politicians tend to be hyper-narcissistic. So going all the way back to 2014, if you can remember Obamacare architect Jonathan Gruber and his narcissism to basically lie about why the law was created the way it was, despite the fact that there was video evidence of him saying the exact opposite. And then the category was starting to be dominated by one Donald Trump. So 2015, it was Trump. 2016, it was Hillary. 2017, traded back to Trump. 2018, bit of a respite from those folks to call out CNN as exemplary of all of the media for their insanity in 2018. And so for 2019, who will it be? Will it go back to Trump? Will it go to Pelosi, Clinton, Sanders, Warren? There are so many politicians out there who are narcissistic enough to deserve the award. Justin?
Well, yeah, it was funny that for a while that it was sort of Trump and Clinton were like Alabama and the Patriots, where when one didn't win the title, the other one did.
That's right.
Yeah, and with all the votes here, there were a lot of votes for Donald Trump, a lot of nominations of Donald Trump. There was a nomination of Hillary Clinton, which I think is kind of funny, because I didn't really think she was that bad this year. I guess the nominations for her not letting go of her loss. Elizabeth Warren was nominated.
She's shilling a book about, during impeachment, she's shilling a book about how she lost.
Yeah. The one that I sort of disagree with is a lot of people nominated Greta Thunberg. She was at the end of the year and she was propped up. I think the real narcissists are her parents. Oh, I talked about that on the show. Yeah. I question whether someone with that degree of autism can actually be narcissistic. I don't know if those two things are compatible. And I do think giving it to her would downplay that her parents are using her as a way to get influence and fame. So I wouldn't be comfortable giving it to her. And then, Daniel, I know a nomination that you are going to appreciate is Nancy Pelosi as the face of impeachment.
Yeah, certainly she started coming on strong at the end of the year, especially with the whole eye control when Donald Trump is impeached nonsense argument.
She's trying to tell the Senate how to run impeachment. It's great. It's great.
Not just the Senate.
I am the government.
The entire world. It's ridiculous.
So that zoomed her up on my – she was already a narcissist, but that sort of zoomed her up the scale very quickly toward the end of the year. But will it be enough? Will it be enough, Justin? Who is the 2019 Narcissist of the Year?
Well, it can be only one person. It is our Narcissist in Chief, which I think we may just rename this award to the Narcissist in Chief Award.
I mean, rename the award. I mean, he's won it so many times already.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He's basically going to retire the category in a certain sense, right?
Right. Like, rename it the Donald Trump Narcissist in Chief Award.
Yeah, I like it. That way, he's disqualified from winning ever again, but he's honored by being the peak of the peak of narcissists.
But to be fair, when we started this award, did we really think that like it would be Donald Trump every year? Because I started this award because way back then I saw the growing problem with narcissism in this culture. And I still think it's a major problem living out here in California. I think it's an insane problem. But isn't it almost interesting that he's risen to this level and he's earned the name of the award at this point?
It's pretty shocking, the fact that not only did he get to that level, but that he was elected President of the United States. Oh, boy. Well,
yeah, but that was something I was going to say to you is I think the reason it's politicians is I think what's the field in our country that that narcissists are most drawn towards? It's entertainment or politics, is it not?
Or objectivist writer, yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Calm down.
All right, moving on.
Before we move on, I have to ask Daniel, did you read Trump's written response to the impeachment to Pelosi? If you haven't read that, it is hilarious. It was clearly written by two people because there's some reasoned arguments in there, and then there are just some spectacular Trumpisms in there. It's great.
But isn't the way Trump runs the government the way Disney runs movies, where they have someone who knows what they're doing write something, and then they just come in and edit it and put in crap that they think is good, but it's actually terrible?
Pretty much. It rivals to me the letter to Turkey's president, which we'll get into a little bit later. But I think if Trump is impeached or loses the election or decides not to run or whatever, he has a real gift for letter writing. I feel like this could be his George W. Bush doing paintings post-presidency thing. Just Trump writes letters to random people around the country and the world.
So he sets up a Cameo account and instead of doing personalized videos, he does personalized letters.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I like it.
All right, moving on to the next category, the John Rawls Social Justice Warrior Trophy for the advancement of a batshit ideology. In the past, we had 2014 BuzzFeed. Ariane Lang wrote an article, 12 characters who kept shaving despite constant peril. This was about, you know, how like in The Walking Dead, she was really offended that the women had shaved armpits. because, you know, everything has to be super naturalistic. Then in 2015, we had Bernie Sanders and Yale students for their historical revisionism. And we've seen how much that's
advanced.
Yeah, we've
seen that this year, right, with the New York Times denying history, saying this country was founded on slavery. We rebelled against Britain in order to further enshrine slavery.
Yes.
And then they argued, saying, we're not historians, but history is in the eye of the beholder.
Right, and so they clearly did a good job advancing that because it has become more normal in 2019. And then the next year was the Fidel Castro eulogizers.
Oh, man.
In 2017, we had Antifa, which we saw in 2019 with the whole thing with who Andy Ngo, was that journalist's name, William?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought you would talk more on it, but okay. Yeah, so that's when we had the whole issue with Andy Ngo, and we saw how much Antifa
Andy
has
Ngo
sort of...
And, yeah, the Portland, a close runner-up for a disaster city in the United States. Yeah, being attacked and the whole milkshake thing, and then all of a sudden he's a racist Nazi, a gay Asian, apparently can join the white power institutions these days.
Right, and we've seen how normalized this is. It's just calling someone a Nazi, and then the whole idea of punch a Nazi has become much more normal. So we saw how Antifa advanced that. And then last year was the person Daniel hates, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for making socialism cool again.
Future president Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
The Instagram president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is the most Instagram president. So for nominees this year, one person was overwhelming, which I guess I kind of blanked this person out because I was like, who's going to win this? And then, like, overwhelmingly, you all nominated the same person. But you again, this isn't the person, but you again, a few people nominated Greta Thunberg. I think she's more of a pawn. She's more of a token. So overwhelmingly, you guys gave the award to AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, this time for the Green New Deal. So she doubled down on her, hey, I'm cool on Instagram. Now I'm going to make an actual policy thing exist. And this is why I hate Instagram, Daniel. This is why I hate social media. You give these people who are people who are like, oh, wait. They find a girl who's like marginally good looking, and then she gets a bunch of followers, and then suddenly she thinks, wait, people like me? Now I'm going to try and change the world. And then all of a sudden she has stupid shit she's putting out in the culture. Is AOC not the Kim Kardashian of politics? Is it not the same? It's the same thing. Convince me it's not the same thing. Convince me.
Hashtag change my mind. I can't. I've got no good argument other than Kim Kardashian might be smarter.
Anything else to say on this award?
I don't know. The whole Green New Deal thing and just the complete absurdity of it, and the fact that we look at the all the Democratic candidates trying to out socialism each other, it's crazy. But I think this is another example of that of sort of playing up the fringes, right? I don't think it's working. So I'm going to make a prediction right now. I don't think AOC is going to win next year. So,
Wow.
I hope not. And William, what you're saying is very well taken because, and again, we're not going to go into this on the show, but since seeing Rise of Skywalker, something I've been reflecting on is sort of social media and reviews and the conversations about just everything and how the conversations are dominated by a certain segment of society. And I've already sort of hinted at this on the show. And it's not the society that's the part of society that's out there living, that's actually being productive. And I'm even defining productive as just going to work, spending time with your family and loved ones, doing your hobbies, and then just doing that again every day and being happy and healthy with that. So the segment of society that's controlling things are these fringes. And I think we're starting to see people realize that. And I think what we may end up seeing, and I think this is the healthiest thing for us maybe, is we just sort of seed all this stuff to them. We say, okay, you can have social media. You can have the theatrical releases of movies. And for the rest of us, we're just going to be more with our family and friends in our local communities where we're happy and healthy, and we don't have to worry about all of this stuff.
it may ironically lead to the ultimate, most ultimate federalism the United States has ever seen. So one note here is I think someone who should have been nominated, perhaps who wasn't, was Twitter for their crazy moderation policies and sort of, you know, good think policies about what is acceptable language and what isn't.
But, well, that's used on YouTube as well, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but nowhere near to the degree that I deal with it on Twitter every day. But
yeah.
So maybe AOC, the first two-time winner, will not be the first three-time winner we shall see in 2020.
I mean, where could she go?
I have a few ideas.
but to hell?
Send her back. Wait, no. Wait. Damn it. Canceled. All right.
Hashtag build that wall.
All right, but speaking of awards that the same person keeps winning over and over again, the Tom Brady Medal for Greatness in the Face of Doubters. All right, hold on, let me scroll down here. I'm looking at the nominations at the same time.
Why doesn't, William, why don't you give us the rundown of this category, which should be very short.
William's going to do the next one.
Oh, okay, fine.
I'm doing this one intentionally. William's doing the next one. The next one's all William because it's all stuff he knows about, he cares about, especially the 2018 one last year.
So, you can tell that we do a lot of show prep here on the midside.
Or he could just trust your quarterback. You just like went into the huddle and you told Tom Brady what play to call. Do you think Edelman does that? Or does Edelman just run out on the field and go, hey, I'm open, and Brady throws in
what's
the ball?
What's it called when you do your own thing against the scheme? There's a word for it. Freelancing. I was freelancing.
Yeah, Jamie Collins, you want to go? You want me to send you to Cleveland?
Oh, my God. Anything but that.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius.
Also true. Don't create a false dichotomy. All right. So the first
Tom Brady Medal for Greatness in the Face of Doubters.
The first 2 years were given to Tom Brady. And then the next year was given to if someone can remember what he did in 2014 and 2015, I'm sure it was amazing. I can't remember specifically.
Super Bowls?
Yeah, probably. I mean,
at least one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those was probably the Deflategate Super Bowl, right?
When
he was suspended four games.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. 2016 was given to Zack Snyder for the Ultimate Edition of Batman versus Superman. Of course, that was, everyone said how terrible the movie was, and then the Ultimate Edition came out, and everyone was like, wait, this is actually a good movie. It's like, yeah. And we're actually still seeing the reverberations of this that year. 2017 was the one that James really pushed for, the anonymous creator of Bitcoin. We, of course, the next year saw cryptocurrency really explode. 2018, last year, was Brett Kavanaugh for his performance in his nomination hearings. Right, Daniel?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you'd have something to say about that. Okay.
So, as happens every show, I basically don't understand anything you say because of internet lag. So I'll just say that I like beer.
Perfect response. That was a line what I was expecting. So we had a few nominations this year. There were a few sports figures. The Hong Kong protesters were actually nominated a few times. Hold on to that thought. Hold on to that thought, because we're doing something here. The American economy.
That's funny.
It makes sense, though. I mean, we're really humming along right now. That's one of the underreported stories of 2019, despite all the
for the first time tariff ever, we entered a decade and exited a decade without a recession.
Yeah, something crazy to be said about that.
Justin Amash was nominated.
Amash,
whatever. Boris Johnson and Brexit, that's a pretty good nomination. A really funny nomination is Robert Pattinson in The Lighthouse. Because he was a Twilight actor, and everyone's like, he sucks. And then I haven't seen the movie, but I guess he puts in a good performance in that movie. So
was Dave Chappelle nominated?
Oh, yeah, I believe Dave Chappelle was not. Yeah, Dave Chappelle. Did you vote? Was that you?
I don't know. I don't remember, honestly. I was probably drunk. Drunk voting is my favorite thing to do.
How
if
did
I have
you know
to vote
Dave
on
Chappelle
anything
was nominated?
No, I just asked because it occurred to me that he was great in The Face of Doubters this year.
Right, so that was a good nomination, I thought. And I considered giving it to him. But as we do on this show, I had to give it to a specific person. Tom, I wonder. No, Zack Snyder.
What?
So the reason it was given to Zack Snyder was for November 17, 2019. This is where he got that entire insane day of promotion for Release the Snyder Cut. And the doubt here is that people were saying since the movie came out, since Justice League came out, that there was no Snyder Cut. But now they're all saying the Snyder Cut exists, and they're arguing over whether it would actually be good or not, and whether Warner Brothers would ever actually release it, and what condition it's in. Now, the reason this is a win, and this is a huge deal, and this is greatness in the face of doubters, is it's very clear what happened now. It is inarguable in my mind that he saw the writing on the wall. He knew he was not going to get creative freedom, so he filmed as much as he could to have all his footage and put as much of his cut together, and then essentially either got himself fired or quit, and then started laying the groundswell on social media for this crescendo on November 17th, which coincided with his negotiations with Warner Brothers and HBO Max to get his cut released. So this is an artist who knew what he was doing to try and get artistic integrity out there. And for us, for him to fight for romanticism in that way is a huge win. And that's why that's greatness in the face of doubters.
Nice. So Zack Snyder wins the Tom Brady medal. Does that mean that Tom Brady wins the next medal?
I don't know. Let's see.
For going, hold on. For going 7 weeks in a row with a below 50% completion rate.
And still winning.
We have
so, William, run through who won it in the past, and then I'll go through the nominees, and then you can say who won.
Sure. Yeah. So this is the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award. So way back in 2014, we gave it to Firestone for fighting Ebola in Africa more effectively than any government did. If you guys remember that story, it was amazing. All these governments failing at Ebola, and it was big news back then. I think Ruka Ruka Ali has that Ebola song. Firestone was the one that actually made a difference out there. And then in 2015, we had Carrie Fisher won the award for her defense of slave Leia. We had all this woke outrage about slave Leia and how that was apparently not good for women. I don't know. But but she stood up to it. And wow, do we miss her now? 2016, we gave it to Uber and Lyft for saying fuck you to Austin after the city passed their anti-ride-sharing regulations. And in 2017, of course, the New England Patriots for their comeback Super Bowl win. And in 2018, we gave it to Dave Rubin for having the balls to stand up to Patreon when they started banning people for political reasons, and him and others like Eric Weinstein, Jordan Peterson, a bunch of others just saying no and leaving Patreon. And in fact, this year they finally launched their alternative called locals.com. So that's still reverberating even in 2019. So Justin, who are the nominees for 2019?
So a lot of people nominated Zack Snyder for this award for the Snyder Cut movement and everything I just talked about, which is, again, very well taken. But I don't think that that's as appropriate, because as you saw for the Doubter Award, and as we've seen, the Awesomeness Award, we've tended to give it to people who had more of a broader cultural effect. And don't get me wrong, I think the Snyder Cut movement was going to have that in the long run, but I don't think it's quite the same as the people we gave it to. Somebody did nominate Tom Brady. I don't know if they were being funny. Somebody nominated Drew Brees as well. Somebody said, I don't honestly have a good answer for this. I need to refocus on the positive things happening in life. I don't know who that was, but thank you. I appreciate that honesty. I think that's a good amount of honesty for a listener, Midsider. And likewise, I think the nominations reflected that we were very unsure of who to give this to. But I think we found the right group of people to give it to. William, take it away.
So the 2019 winner of the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award goes to the Hong Kong protesters.
Woo!
I think, as we've discussed in the last story, they are going to have a lasting impact I know I spoiled it a little bit by saying that in the last story, but we're going to look back on 2019 and the impact they've had in China, in Taiwan, in the region, but even in our culture has been tremendous.
Yeah, and when you talk about visually, something that like really visually sticks with you and is an iconic image, the Hong Kong protesters out there in the streets fighting back is something that I'm always going to remember. What about you, Daniel?
Yes, I mean, the reading from the Constitution and from the Declaration of Independence and singing the national anthem of the United States, all those things that embody this spirit of Americanism, those are going to be iconic things that stick with me forever and hopefully that lead to a better world overall.
All right, let's move on to the Romantic Manifestation Award, where we think about how the world could be better and what the ideal world is, and we put that in art. This year, as you would think, was kind of a tough year, where there didn't seem to be a lot to be excited about artistically. Things seemed to have been this very corporatized. And I don't even know, Daniel, William, is it fair to say corporatized anymore, or do we really have to look at the effect of the Chinese market on our art?
I think it's the Chinese market. It's also this sort of design by committee we've been getting, right? Mm-hmm. On a lot of things. And let's not forget, I mean, well, you know, we had the huge disappointments in Game of Thrones, and then at least amongst the public, right? We sort of all knew where this was going. You know, the disaster that is Star Trek Discovery, and the endless sequels and remakes coming out of Hollywood.
I love how, William, I love how every time we bring up a disappointment, you have to shit on Star Trek Discovery. Like, that's so far in my rear view, but you're so angry about it. I love it. I'm being serious.
The
I'm not making fun of you. I love
infinite.
It.
Yeah. Infinite.
And I think your point is very well taken, because if you look at the previous award winners, they're all very individualistic artists. Right, 2014 was Christopher Nolan for Interstellar. 2015 was Brian Fuller for Hannibal. Unfortunately, he's kind of gone off the deep end with Trump derangement syndrome. But back then, his art was very individualistic. 2016 was Damien Chazelle for La La Land. 2017 was Patty Jenkins for Wonder Woman, specifically the No Man's Land scene. Last year was Brad Bird for Incredibles 2. So we can see all of the very individualistic approach to art and movie making in those. Now, this year, let's look at some of the nominees. Someone said, damn, was there anything worth mentioning? Someone said, question mark. Someone said, Apollo 11. I didn't see that documentary. Did anyone see that documentary?
No.
No, I missed it in IMAX huge format, and so I decided I wasn't going to see it.
And then someone said Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino. Again, I didn't see that movie. Someone said the makers of the live-action Aladdin. Going to disagree on that one. I don't think I think it'd be very difficult to give Disney this award. Although it was the best remake of a Disney movie.
Yeah, but they added that woke song in there. Can I just fast-forward through that?
Yes, please. Someone just gave a dash. Someone said pass. And then someone said an interesting one, which I thought was a pretty good one. John Wick 3 Parabellum. I think the John Wick movies are very good. If you out there have not seen the John Wick movies, I think they're worth seeing, and they're one of the better things in our culture. Especially, I think they become more romantic as they go. The first one's very understated, but the second and third are very, very romantic in the way they're approached.
Can I nominate stand-up comedy for finally a year where they stood up to the woke culture?
Yeah, I think we could nominate Dave Chappelle in particular, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Bill Burr. But just two specials out there, at least, that finally said, F you, I'm going to make jokes about things that you find offensive.
Yeah, but Bill Burr's been making jokes about stuff you find offensive forever. That's his whole thing.
Yeah, he sort of specifically went after the woke stuff this year, though.
Yeah, he goes after feminism in a way that people need to hear it more. I mean, he really gets to the core of what the issue with feminism is.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are very well taken as well. And I would like to nominate, and I mentioned this on the most recent episode before this, the most recent edition before this, Richard Jewell was a very, very good movie. And I think it stands up there, and it would have won except one other movie. And we're talking about individualistic filmmakers, and this person was nominated twice. So this isn't just me saying this. You Midsiders nominated him as well. M. Night Shyamalan for Glass. Glass was the culmination of the trilogy, which was Unbreakable and Split, and all the characters from that came together. And if you look at the commentary in that movie and the point of that movie, and that movie being about how they try to tell you you're not special and you're not unique and there's nothing valuable about your life. And if you believe you're special and you're unique and you have ability and you are capable of being great, that it's just a delusion in your head, and they use psychology to do that to you. And then there's this shadow organization that goes in and cleans all of this up. So basically, the, you know, David Dunn from Unbreakable and James McAvoy's character from Split and Mr. Glass from Split as well, or from Unbreakable as well, all come together and they're having, you know, their superhero, supervillain confrontation. But what you find out is that that actually happens in around the world, you know, frequently. I don't want to say like super frequently. They don't establish how frequent it is, but the shadow organization comes in and first tries to convince them that they're not, they don't have these powers. David Dunn, you aren't unbreakable. You know, the Split character, you aren't this beast. You know, Mr. Glass, you aren't a supervillain. You don't have these powers. Tries to convince them that they aren't special. And then afterwards kills them all because these people can't exist. We need to keep the population docile. We need to keep human beings under control. And the way we do is by pretending this doesn't even happen. And it's just a very stark statement on the way culture actually is. You know, the way they try to take us away from reality. And they try to convince us that life isn't what we think it is. And life isn't special. And the end speech in that movie is phenomenal. So if you haven't seen Glass, go and see it. And I think it's well-deserved for M. Night, especially in light of his career renaissance, where they went out of his way. You want to talk about what was done to Zack Snyder, Daniel? He has so much power and so much success already that it's impossible to get rid of him. But M. Night literally went bankrupt. He literally had to put up his own house as collateral when he made the movie The Visit. And then off of that, he reinvested and reinvested until he could make this movie. So I think that this award is very well handed out, very well deserved. And I think it speaks volumes to what he has achieved in his life.
Probably some controversy about this, but probably a better prospect than just not giving out the award this year. So,
all right, you want to move on to the final award?
Let's do it.
All right, it is how time works, yes.
The Peak Farce Audience Award. This is the award given out by you, the audience, of what the most farcical news story of the year was. Daniel, go ahead and read the past ones.
Sure. So we started giving this award out in 2016, and that year there was a tie for the award between these two stories. Number one, University Safe Space Training says accepting homosexuality is homophobic. And a professor telling students, if you read to your kids, you're unfairly disadvantaging others. So remember that, parents out there. 2017 had this gem of a story. Straight black men are the white people of black people.
I know, William, you loved that story.
I love this story. It was so intersectional at the time. It was ahead of its time. It was ahead of its time.
That's
well,
right.
Well, it is, because, I mean, look at the way Dave Chappelle was attacked this year, right? And I think that straight black men are starting to wake up, ironically. That's one of my things I love about the term woke, right? Is like they act like they're the ones taking the red pill, right? When really they're the ones who are asleep. And I think we were starting to see straight black men rebel and see how they're the ones really being shit on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2018 had this story, which caused much guffaw and farcical laughter, which was, thanks for not raping us all, good men, but it's not enough. So that brings us to 2019, where some of the nominees are.
And as I run through these, if you guys want to give any commentary, go ahead. Phoenix Restaurant says this is a photo of coal miners, but I see offensive blackface. Although, by the way, I'm only reading the ones people have voted on. So that received some votes.
Yep.
Was I gone for that show?
We have to wipe away a historical incident where white people were oppressed in order to not have blackface. Great story.
What a great commentary that is.
Ohio City votes to give Lake Erie same legal rights as a person.
That did lead me down a path of looking into environmental quote-unquote personhood and finding an incredibly shocking amount of scholarly literature in favor of such a nonsense notion. So hey, that had some usefulness to us, despite the fact that it was insanely farcical.
If Lake Erie has a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, I think Ohio better watch out. So those New Yorkers.
Because Lake Erie will cut a bitch.
Can we hide a nuclear launcher at the bottom of Lake Erie now?
What else?
Man threatens to sue magazine for using his photo in an article about hipsters looking alike before realizing it isn't him.
That was great. That was absolutely great.
That sort of encapsulates the narcissism of social media users.
You should have dropped some of the woker joke stories in here to see if we could tell the difference. But, yeah.
The grandkid strike.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Keeping grandkids from your parents in order to
increase their wokeness,
achieve woke change. Yeah.
That's similar to the person who decided not to have kids, right?
Yeah, but that guy I applaud.
Yeah.
multiple NBA teams moving away from the term owners. Our obsession with labels and how they don't act. The labels aren't the problem. It's the way you're thinking about things, right?
Yeah.
Here's the story behind the bizarre painting of Bill Clinton in a blue dress seen at Jeffrey Epstein's home. I'm surprised that didn't receive all the votes, to be honest with you. That sort of encapsulates everything to me.
Funny.
A professor saying Tom Brady's white male omnipotence buttresses American white supremacy. By the way, I still have his chapter that I haven't gotten the heart to read yet.
Justin has become good friends with this man, apparently.
I've traded one email with him, okay?
Like I said.
Wow. We should, deplatform you or cancel you or something.
On my own show?
Why not?
Soon.
Are you going to impeach me?
Yes.
Don't worry, I'll withhold the articles from submission to Daniel. So, therefore, you're not really impeached.
Trump's extraordinary letter to Turkey's how do you say his name?
Erdogan.
Sure.
That was my favorite of the year, by the way.
Don't be a tough guy. So, yeah.
The fact that a sitting president wrote that letter who has not been convicted, or sorry, not been committed to an asylum is outstanding. That is just phenomenal. This man is doing foreign policy for us, everyone.
All right, Daniel, what's the winner? Go ahead, you can hand it out.
But the winner was even more farcical in terms of the literal sense of the word than all of those things. This was a story out of India that got some traction here, which was, did you consent to being born? Why one man is suing his parents for giving birth to him. So congratulations to all the nominees and to the winner. This really was the peak farce of 2019.
But did he consent to receiving this award? I expect a lawsuit soon.
I mean, I just think that that's the reductio ad absurdum of all this social justice stuff, isn't it?
Oh, totally. Yes.
How narcissistic are you to believe you need to consent to being born?
All right, guys. It's been a great year. So why don't we put a bow on things and say, what did we learn this year? Take a second, think about that. All right, that's all the time you get. Go ahead, William.
Well, I learned that despite the incredible amounts of farce and collectivism in the world, that there's an air of change going on. And uh, I think This show is part of it, and I really appreciate in 2019 all the interactions we had with you, the audience, especially on Discord, and even in game with some of you guys reaching out to me. So, yeah, thank you to all listeners.
Wait. I've never heard of this. In League, people are reaching out to you?
Yeah.
Why is this the first sentence mentioned on the show? We have like a League of Legends group or something? Like, what's going on?
Well, not a group, but...
A clan? What's the word? What's it called? Wait, no,
yes,
not clan.
Any two or more white males in any given area is considered a clan. So.
Oh, yeah. Man,
very cool. Continue.
Just like two or more gays in any area is considered a parade.
So, Daniel, what did you learn this year?
Oh well, I don't know. Yes, I do. I learned that there is a world beyond politics, and no. I really knew that. But 2019
was an
important. Someone
living in DC learned this lesson. Oh, it's because you moved out of DC. You're in Nova now.
That's right. Nova, please. I wish. I don't have Nova money. I have Maryland money. I work at a non-profit. Emphasis on the non, not the bread. So it's just a good reminder that despite the fact that I work in the district, that not everything is political, that most conversations being had, in fact, the vast, vast majority of conversations being had are non-political. And it was good to focus on art this year and talk about art, despite the fact that it was mostly terrible. It was a respite, a much needed respite from the day-to-day craziness that is Pan-Am, i.e. the District of Columbia.
How much of this realization comes from having a young child?
A lot of it, because there's so much focusing on him and him not killing himself, and, him not hurting other people, you know, with sticks, that you realize that there's just so much more to life, primarily keeping other little things alive. But it's been great. Fatherhood has been great and very helpful, but... the show has been great and helpful too. So,
Justin, what did you learn? Did you learn that you need to have a baby?
Not exactly. Not exactly. It's similar though. And I think Daniel, the reason I asked the reason I asked that question is what William was saying earlier, what we were talking about earlier about the fringes versus the local. And Daniel, you said, you know, hyper-federalism or the greatest federalism ever, you know, the greatest amount of federalism ever. And I really see things going that way. And I really think that for our own personal happiness, we need to have that sort of mentality where we focus on the local and we focus on what we're doing in our daily lives, right? Who we are is what we do in our daily lives. We always talk about having all these big goals, but those are results. Those aren't like what you live for. What you live for is the way you're living every day. And for me personally, it's just, I know that I have to leave California, and my goal is in the next 6 months to be in Florida. That is my goal. I'm applying for jobs. It's just a matter of when I get a job, then I'm going to move there. And it's just, I need to be in a place where it's more sane. And I can be in a community I want to be a part of and I want to contribute to, and I want to share with, rather than trying to be part of something where everyone is just fighting each other, or being on social media all the time where everyone is just fighting each other. So I think just that realization that that's what the country needs, because that's what we individually need, and actually actualizing in that in my life is, I think that's an important next step. And hopefully that will be reflected on the show in coming years. And hopefully this show will continue to grow and get even better and hopefully more popular based upon having that perspective. I hope we can shift in 2020 to having this show be more about, you know, still witnessing the farce, obviously. But when we witness the farce, what can we learn about this as to how to improve our local communities and improve our daily lives, rather than just saying, hey, what's wrong with all of this? Because I'm ready to move beyond that. I'm ready to move towards, hey, you know, I'm going to make my life as good as I can every day by being in a place where I'm happy and I'm healthy. And I am getting there. It's just that being in California is really inhibiting me. So That's where I want the show to go. That's where I want my life to go. So hopefully you'll be hearing more about that as we're going to Florida
or Texas.
We're going to Florida. So we hope you learned something this year. And if you did, tell us everywhere, but I won't shill too much. Just if you learned something this year, you know what? Don't tell us. Tell a friend. Tell a friend what you learned this year from listening to The Midside.
See, you're already doing it, Daniel. You're already doing it.
That's right.
That
will make more Midsiders, and that will make a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year for everyone involved. Until next year, like so many people say, this time of year, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside for the year. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a happy holiday!
What did you ask Santa for this year?
A job in Florida.
And you got a lump of coal instead.
Pretty much. What about you guys?
William?
I'm getting a Tesla.
What?
Yeah.
Like a truck?
No, I'm not getting the cuck truck. I'm getting a Model 3.
Nice.
I'm going to get one of those license plate things that says coal powered, just to rub it in everyone's face.
And everyone's going to say, who's coal?
What about you, Daniel?
Peace on Earth? Good. No, not at all.
Wokeness on Earth.
No, I asked for a trip to Rome in 2020.
Ooh.
So I think that's going to happen.
Sweet. See you next year.
Merry Christmas.